Accession number 17358, Reel 4.
Mr. Flanagan, Reel 4.
We thought we'd knocked out all the goddamn placements when we, because we'd eliminated all the ones we could see. So we went again to try and bring the amethyst, which was aground on the mud. We went in again, astern, lined up for the rope, threw the rope across, and they hit us again, and they hit us with everything. So we had to pull away again, and as we pulled away this time, they hit the bridge, and they took the wheelhouse out. So we had no steering, and we went aground. So we had to steer from the stern, from the tiller flat. So they had to bring a line of command down to the tiller flat to give the orders of manoeuvrability and to connect the rudder manually is a hell of a job. It's really hard physical labour, because you've got to put the stays in, and you've got to move the rudder, and the rudder is heavy, and they, it managed to do this anyway, and then they move it by hand, which is quite horrendous. And still trying to fight a battle. Well, they took the bridge out. They killed the coxswain. They wounded the two quartermasters. They wounded the skipper. They wounded one of the other officers. And they slowly worked their way down the bridge work of the ship until they were on the main body of the ship. We got hit just on the waterline, and the chief asked me to go down with him. And we had a look at it. We filled it with hammocks and wedged one of the mess deck tables against them to hold them in place. And as I came out of the lower mess deck, halfway through the hatch, the two forward guns went off together, and all the lights went flashed blue. And at that moment of time, I thought I was going to die. I thought, well, this is it, you know. And it was only our guns going off. It was just a tremendous explosion. I thought, oh, here we go. But nothing. So I realised just our guns firing. Went back along the deck. And we had several fires to put out. And then the Bofors were running out of ammunition. So we formed a chain of blokes passing ammunition to the hatchway. And the Bofors were a quarter way along the ship from the boiler room hatches, and the ship comes along and it goes down like that, and from there it's about quarter of the ship, stern of the ship, and it's open deck, and the first bloke goes carrying out this box of ammunition, and suddenly there's bullets whistling all round him, so he had to speed up and just throw the box of ammunition up onto the gun deck and dive into a little cubbyhole, and they knew he was there, and they were machine gunning and all sorts of caliber ammunition popping away all round it, and then he had to leg it back, and then the next one goes, and we got about four wounded on that particular thing, and one of them fell on the deck, and he'd been hit in the middle, and as he was hit he turned, and I went out and pulled him, and he was coming into two pieces, you know, so I had to leave him and get somebody to sort of drag him in with me. And that's hard to take, you know. And we eventually got him up to the wardroom, and the sick bay is aft on the destroyer, but that was being hammered, so they brought everything forward to the wardroom. But while they were transferring over, a shell came and took out all the medical equipment, so they had nothing to work with. They only had some, using anything for bandages and things like that, and a few field dressings. and the forward part of the ship, that was taking a real thumping, and there were several people being wounded every minute, you know. It was quite horrendous. I was running the deck with this box of ammunition, throwing it and diving into this corner. And when we did that for a while, and we'd given them enough ammunition to carry on, and then we went back to the damage control again, fighting fires and looking at holes in the superstructure and things like that. And then the forward hoist went off, that takes the ammunition from the magazine to the guns. So I was told to go and see what I could do there. So we took out all the ammunition from the hoist, and it'd been hit, so it was all twisted. We took out all the ammunition, put it on the floor, on the deck, I should say, and rigged a block and tackle up to lift that ammunition out the magazine, and formed a chain of lads to take this ammunition off the floor up to the forward guns. And that started, and that was working well, and I was on the hoist taking the ammo, and then suddenly the line stopped, so I went along to see what was going on, and there was a young lad from Birkenhead, and a shell had hit the B gun, and the blast had come through the door, through the crack in the door, and just split him from the top of his shoulder to the back of his thigh, just opened up like that, you know. And I had to try and look after him and get him in, and carry on with the gun, with the ammunition. Took him into the sick bay, and we were walking along the open deck again to get him into the wardroom, and they're popping away at us, you know. And there's nothing you could do. We couldn't run. Anyway, we got in safely. Went back down onto the hoist, and that was working well again, and then suddenly it stopped. The there's no more ammunition coming up, so I went down into the stoker's mess deck. What's the matter? And he's putting the hatch on the magazine. So I said, what are you doing that for? He said, there's a fire in there. So I said, well, we've got to put it out. So take the hatch off, and got a couple of fire extinguishers. Went down. He went down into the, and I passed him the fire extinguisher down, showed him how to use it. Went looking for a couple more. Come back with a couple more. And as he emptied them, I replaced them. Put the fire out in the magazine. Came back up onto the hoist again, started again hoisting ammunition all the time. The when we were doing this in the stoker's mess deck, it was absolutely alive with bullets and small bore ammunition all round you, you know, and there's nowhere to hide. I was very fortunate I didn't get hit. I went back on the hoist, and we were working away for a while, and then the shell came in and landed between my feet and blew my feet off, and I was thrown 10 feet backwards into the wall, into the bulkhead, just sat on the floor. Looked down at one of my right big toe was up here somewhere.
Near your thigh?
It was up on my knee, yeah. And I looked, and my foot was all shattered, and this one was all shattered. And I thought, wow, you know. And a lad came over to me, and he said, "How are you?" I said, "I'm okay." I said, "Look at that." I said, "I had a new pair of socks on this morning." And you're sick when you see these things, you know. And then he just vomited, and he went away. And I was looking round, and I didn't know I'd done this until I went to a reunion. I looked round, and the place was on fire, and there was a lad, a Welsh lad, on the floor. His name was Roberts, from Carnarvon, I think he was, and he was on the floor, and he'd been behind me, and he was carrying a cordite shell, and as the explosion went, the cordite shell exploded and set me on fire, and set him on fire. And he was burning, and I was sitting, and there was a fire extinguisher next to me, and I got it, and I put the fire out on his back, you know, and the fire out near him. And then I thought, I've got to try and get some help here, and I was on my hands and knees across to the bulkhead door, and the bulkhead doors are about 18 inches off the floor, you know, the oval shaped doors, and I couldn't get through it. And I was trying to climb this, and I was shouting, you know, "We need some help in here, there's a fire." And this big petty officer just came in, Ackhurst his name was, and he just picked me up and threw me over his shoulder and carried me up. And when I got to the sick bay, well, the ward room was full of wounded, and all the way down the stairs, there's blokes sitting on the stairs all the way down. And he cleared the half landing, and he just sat me on the landing, and he said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah." I wasn't in pain, everything had just sort of switched off, but it was unpleasant. And I said, "Straighten my foot out." He said, "You haven't got one." But what was left of this left foot was folded underneath, so I just reached forward and sort of put it flat. And I was okay then, it sort of eased and I was alright. And then the sick bay lad came down and he had a look at me. They got hold of the Doc Bentley, the doctor, and he came down and he said, "Let's have him up here." So he took me up there and he said, "I'm going to have to cut your left foot off." So I can't feel anything. So can you imagine yourself in the dentist chair and you've had cocaine, that sort of thing, and I could feel him hacking away, sort of cutting through the sinews, and then he threw my foot on the floor, bandaged it up, and then he started cutting pieces off this one, and he did it with a straight razor. No morphine, all the morphine had gone, but I didn't feel anything. I can't say that I was brave or anything, like, I just didn't feel anything. And I was lying on the floor, and I hadn't realised it, but I'd been burnt, and my face was tightening up on me, you know. So with my face, it's tight. And I'm lying on the floor, and there's blokes coming in all the time wounded, you know. One of the lads, he'd had his hand off, he joined the Navy with me, and he'd had his hand off, and he was sitting talking to me, and he's lying that way down, and I was and he'd been hit in the neck as well as losing his hand, and he's searching round for something to put under his head so that, because he was having to pull his hair to talk to me, you know, sort of pull his head up. He couldn't sort of lift his head forward, and he put this thing on under his. He said, "Oh God, that's bloody cold," and it was my foot. And he keeps reminding me about that. But after a while, they lifted me up onto the seat, like a bench seat, and I was on there. And all I could think of, because there was bloody shells hitting us all over the place, was, if this goes down, how am I going to swim? That's all that was in my mind. And it was, time went on, and slowly the firing stopped. I was drinking water and just bringing it up again. And underneath me was a petty officer, and he'd been wounded, and I was drinking this water, and I was bringing it all back all over, and I said to him, "Why don't you move?" He said, "I can't." And I said, "I'm awful sorry." He said, "Don't worry about it." And every time I drank, it just, with the shock of it, just threw it out again. Time went on, and it sort of went dark, it went quiet, and I was drifting in and out of sleep, as I thought anyway. And then we stopped, and there was activity, so I sort of woke up and I'm looking, and there was doctors, and we pulled alongside the London. The London was on her way up, and they had surgeons and everything, and operating theatres on board the ship. So they said, "We'll take you wounded." So they took all the seriously wounded off the ship, and they said, "What about him?" And now there's no chance. And I was looking to see who they were talking about, and it was me. And I thought, no chance, what are they on about? You know. And maybe that sparked what was in me to say, "Woof, yeah, I'm not going to die." Anyway, we stayed overnight at Qianjin, and then the following day we went down to Shanghai.
What happened to you at Qianjin?
Nothing. I just sleeping there. I was anyway. We pulled down to Shanghai. At Qianjin, the London and the Black Swan came alongside us there, and they were on their way up to try and take rescue the Amethyst. They took us down to Shanghai, and we had these old time American ambulances, and they carried us out on stretchers, and they took us down a gangplank, you know, that was very, very steep, and they took me down feet first. Oh, that hurt. And then he put me in the ambulance, and they had these stretchers that were big metal, round metal bars, you know, shaped, and they carried these and put them in the ambulance, and every bump of the road just happened to be on my stumps, you know. And there was a couple of reporters trying to interview me, you know, and I'm hanging on to my teeth, you know. And one was from Life magazine, and I just said to this, there was a Royal Marine there, I said, "Just get rid of them, will you?" And he stopped the ambulance, he opened the door, and he just pushed them out, you know, "Get out, close the door." Took me to the hospital. They took me straight into the theatre in the hospital, and two Chinese nurses trying to take my field dressings off, and I'm fighting them, you know, "Get off, leave a little." And the two doctors came in, there was a Chinese and an American doctor, And they said, what's going on here? I said, they're trying to take these dressings off, I said. And they've been on for about 15 hours. I said, there's no way I'm going to let them do that. So they said, okay, just sit back, you know. And they give me an injection, count to 10. I think I got to about 3 and I'd gone. And my next recollection, I sort of woke up and one of the Scouse Chambers, the lad I was telling you, was like my mentor. He was drinking a pint of lager. Or a drink he had, a lager he had in his hand. And I looked at him, I said, oh, give us a drink. And he climbed out of bed and he's giving me a drink of lager. And it tasted marvellous. And the sister came in, and she was a little old lady. And she was, oh, she went bananas with him. You should not be out of bed and you should not be drinking. You get back in bed. And I said, I'm thirsty. She said, I'll get you a drink. And she got me a brandy eggnog. And it was gorgeous. And I went, slipped off again. And the next time I woke up, it was night time. And there's a nurse alongside me. And as I woke up, she said, are you okay? I said, yeah, brandy eggnog, please. So she went and got me a brandy eggnog and gave me a slipped away again. And apparently I was away for 3 days, you know, just drifting in and out of this. And they thought they were going to lose me. And then I woke up and there was visitors in. And there's a lad... Again, I joined the Navy with a lad called Higgins, and he was off the Amethyst. And I looked at him, it's Higgins, that. So I said, Higgins. And he looked at me. And I said, come on, don't you recognise me? I joined the Navy with you, Flanagan. Oh, he said, and he came over. I said, why didn't you recognise me? He said, well, I don't like telling you. So I said, what do you mean? So he said, you're all bandages. So I said, my arms were all in bandages and my hands. So I said, why? So he said, oh. And he got the nurse, he said, have you got a mirror? And I was like the invisible man, you know, 2 eyes, no, and a mouth. Wow, I said, what's happened to my face? And he said, oh, you're burnt. Well, you imagine the worst, don't you? So, I sort of drifted in and out in this place, and then the two Chinese orderlies came in, and they're trying to stick this tube up my back passage. They're going to give me an enema, but I'd never seen an enema or heard of an enema before that. So I'm thumping them. I'm fighting these two. The hell do you think you're doing? And the sister came in again and she said, you haven't been to the toilet for 3 days, we've got to empty your stomach, you know. So I said, okay. So she cleaned me out. And she said, are you hungry? I said, I'm starving. So she gave me a full breakfast, which you wouldn't even do today, would they? You know.
Don't think so.
No, they wouldn't do it today. I had a full breakfast. And from then on, I just sort of started to get better. I was in a centre cot, and cots on this side and that side of me, all that moving in the centre. And I just started to get better and better, you know. And I found out, again, years later, that this nurse that sat with me was called Flanagan. And that she said, I'm staying with him until he comes through, you know. And it was, I'd love to have met her, I'd love to have thanked her, you know. But these doctors did a marvellous job on me. And then the communists started to move in on Shanghai. So we had to get out of there, you know. And they again put us into these cradles and took us down to the jetty and took us in landing craft, and they hoisted us aboard an American hospital ship called the Repose, and they fastened us in these cradles, and you know the height of a sort of liner. Well, these were a bit like big liners, and the cot's spinning like that. And again, I'm thinking, what the bloody hell happens if I get in the water here? With no legs, I won't be able to swim. Anyway, nothing happened. They pulled me in, put me in the cot, and again I was by the nurses. And by then the pains had started to come through, and I was feeling them pretty badly, you know. And the Yanks were quite wonderful with us. They were, as much as I hated them, they were absolutely brilliant with us. The first thing they did, they gave me a shot to kill the pains, and then they came along with this big tray of injections, and there's one like that, and I said, "Who's that for?" He said, "You." Just turned me over and went pfft, one up each cheek. One was penicillin, the other was something, anti-gangrene injection. Turned me back and trying to get off my bottom, you know. Couldn't use my hands, couldn't use my arms. And they're all laughing. And they all got the same. They all gave them all a massive shot of penicillin and an anti-gangrene. Being bandaged up, I couldn't light a cigarette. In the bed alongside me was Chambers. He'd come alongside me. He'd been hit in the chest and in the head. And when they x-rayed him, they found that whatever had penetrated in was, you know, the metal strip off boxes of foods. You know, the food was in boxes and then nailed with this metal strip. Well, it was a piece of that with a nail, and the nail was that far from his heart. And he'd been hit in the head with it as well. Well, he was alongside me. And I say to these Yanks, "Could I have a cigarette?" And they'd go away and they'd come back with 200 cigarettes. "No, I just want a cigarette." "Oh, okay." So they'd light a cigarette for me. And sit there, and then Scouse would say, "Could I have a cigarette as well?" So they had two cigarettes on the go, you know. But the nurses were superb, you know, and I wasn't sleeping very well. I was having great pain by this time. It was starting to really hurt me. And they come along, "Are you still not asleep yet?" "Yeah." You know. And then the American surgeons took me in and dressed me wounds. God, that hurt. The one working on the left one was very callous. And I think he learned a few words that he didn't know before, you know. The other one was very gentle, and I was saying, "What were you a butcher in civilian life?" You know, certainly were.